This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I just have to say, you know, I chose this song today because I like Paul Simon, but he's pretty white. There's no N-words in here, and he's not referring to anyone as a pedophile, so I'm not sure I made the right choice, really. A little too honky-ish, if you ask me, here on the day after the Super Bowl. But I went with it anyway.
I can understand the lyrics.
Oh, that's true.
You know, that actually understand. Is one of the points about last night. You couldn't, if that was part, thank you, Fred, for bringing that up, because if that was part of the goal to understand the, you know, the social message there, you couldn't understand a word he was saying. And by the way, if you want to look up the words, you'll find that the words are very different from what they were last night, because there's a few words starting with N, and like an N, that's the thing that people might not know. The N-word is literally in every verse, if not every other verse. It's not like it's just one or two. How I give Kendrick Lamar credit for
being able
not
to
dropping
avoid
those,
that.
By
yeah.
the way.
Yeah, I mean, that part didn't surprise me very much. I mean, these guys do perform on national television and different things for award ceremonies, so they're used to like censoring out a lot of their music because it is so inappropriate. But it is funny, like last night, as I was listening to the songs that I knew, I was like, yep, there's the censored. You kind of wonder, what's he going to say in place of it? And he made it sound pretty smooth for the most part.
Yeah, well, yeah. And by the way, that guy's what, like 4'2" or something like that?
He's not very tall, though. I don't know if he's that short, but...
We looked it up. He's 5'5".
Oh,
here's
wow.
the part by SZA. I did like this part.
Well, that's because it was singing.
This is from the Black Panther soundtrack, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I really can't hear it there, but I did like her part. It wasn't too bad.
Just and she's from St. Louis also.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, we highlighted that last week.
You know what I liked? I don't know if I liked it or I felt creeped out by it. I think I felt creeped out about it. The fleshy cowboy hat.
That was
head
so weird.
Commercial.
Oh, the commercial.
I saw that too.
Yeah.
That creeped me out too, Fred.
That did. And the seal as an animal.
Okay, that cracked me up.
That was so weird.
That was funny.
Did you, listen to the Carl's Jr. commercial. Let's see this one here.
Let's be real. Everyone's going to be a hot mess after the big game. Been there. Done that. And I've got just what you need to cure that post-party bug. The Carl's Jr. Hangover Burger. Egg, double bacon. Yeah. You need that double bacon.
Yep.
Charbroiled beef, hash browns, cheese, and sauce.
Yep.
Just the way I like it.
So that commercial features...
It's free.
A social media star by the name of Alex Earle, who is super hot. And what's funny is she's the niece of one of my wife's friends from Milwaukee. And I don't really understand. Like, I always ask, do you know who she is, Ethan?
I don't know.
Okay, because most younger people know who she is.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, because she's got, you know, millions of followers online. I think she's really kind of only popular because of Instagram. She's also married to a guy on the Dolphins. I can't remember his
name.
Oh,
that probably helps.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I don't think that's what made her... She was famous on her own.
Huh.
Like, big, big following. It's fascinating to me. And look, I'm an old media guy. I don't really understand sometimes how that happens, but they put her in a commercial last night.
When you're pretty, it does a lot of things for you on Instagram, depending on what you post.
I understand that. So we have a storm that's heading our way, but I wanted to mention this, and maybe we can get Dave Murray on either tonight or tomorrow. We're having trouble getting a hold of him. Maybe the reason we're having trouble getting a hold of Dave is because what's happening in California. Have you heard about this river storm at all?
No.
So this is the LA Times this morning. You know, I always go there. It's how I kind of was on the cutting edge of all the fire stuff, which seems like it was a year ago. But a major atmospheric river storm, strong enough to potentially rival some of the extreme storms that have walloped Southern California in recent winters, is barreling toward the coast, raising the specter of damaging landslides and flooding across the weekend. The region, not the weekend.
Oh my gosh.
It's going to reach California on Thursday or Friday. They say it's the strongest storm of the winter so far. It threatens to drop large amounts of rain. They say 2 to 4 inches along the coast and 48 inches in the mountains and the foothills. That would be a problem because of the fires.
Yeah.
Right? So I guess there's a 60% chance of rainfall of that magnitude in Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo, a 40% in Los Angeles and Ventura counties, but the chances have increased, not decreased. So they're a little worried about this particular storm. If we do get Dave on talking about our winter storm, best we can determine right now, a little bit of light snow maybe overnight into tomorrow. And what I saw earlier today is snow and ice potential south, well south of St. Louis tomorrow. But then Thursday is maybe where we get a little bit more significant snowfall. Now, some of that has ranged from 3 to 5 inches.
Wait,
to
Thursday or Wednesday?
No, Wednesday. Did I say Thursday? Yeah. Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday is when it's going to hit. But then, you know, the question would be, how much would we get around here? Originally, I saw 3 to 5. Then I saw 1 to 3. Then I thought I saw 3 to 5 coming back. You're saying you're not seeing as much?
Oh, my gosh. Now they've changed it again.
What does it say now?
1 to 3.
Okay.
It was under one. Oh, my gosh. 3 to 5. 1 to 3. Under 1. Now back to 1 to 3.
And this is just National Weather Service weather app?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And let's not forget that because this is St. Louis, the heart of the Midwest, there's a chance that we get nothing.
That's true, too.
Well, there is. You know, there is, but there's also a chance that we get more than nothing.
You're right, and that is just as likely.
Right. So I'm trying to make, everybody tries to make plans, right? You got kids, you know, go to school. My daughter's already planning on not having school. I'm supposed to head to mid-Missouri on Wednesday. I told Alexa this morning, I'm like, you know, if you don't have school, I'm going to be so pissed. If you don't have school Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because you know it's not going to be one day. If it snows 3 to 5 inches, they'll have it closed for the rest of the week, likely. And then there's a holiday on Monday. So the number of days this kid will be in the second semester of fourth grade might be by May 10 or 12. I don't know. Because she had off on Friday. They went to that Great Wolf Lodge place in Kansas City.
Did they love it?
She did love it. She was very brave on the slides. Like when I've been with her at water parks, not as brave, but
she's getting older.
Yeah, look at that.
That's a fun place.
Well, she's just taking a lot of steps of growth, you know? I mean, even from last year to this year, I mean, she barely talked last year, and this year this was her show. It was the Alexa Reardon show.
Have you been there, Fred, to that place?
I've been there several times
with
my boys when they were younger.
Oh, wow. I've never done it. We've always had plans to go. We've even had reservations, and they always blew up, so I was glad that they got to go last week. All right, let's do this here.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
On this day in history,
I turned your mic down instead of the music. That was Monday board error on the host's part. Sorry about that. That's okay.
We will get to Super Bowl stuff, but I'm starting here because it's music. And in 1978, Fred, Van Halen's self-titled debut album was released. It contains all kinds of stuff like this.
You really got me now. You got me so I don't know what I'm too wearing.
Oh, yeah.
You really right?
Yeah, good stuff.
Van Halen's first album is 47 years old. Doesn't that freak you out?
It does. That 1978 was my year of graduation from high school.
Oh, my gosh, Fred.
And our high school theme song was Dust in the Wind by Kansas.
Can I tell you something that was not intentional?
Something.
If I'm not mistaken, isn't Jamie's Crying on the bump list
today? Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's totally accidental.
Yes.
It was there was Van Halen vibe coming through when I was doing this morning because I did not know about the anniversary.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's
funny. How about that? Because when I was adding it this morning, I thought, I wonder if they did that on purpose. Yeah, that's funny.
I could have lied and just said, you know, Sue, I was all on top of that. That's why I picked Jamie's Crying a little bit later this afternoon.
Yeah, you feeling okay today, Mark?
You really got me. Running with the Devil is the other one that we all really know. Jamie's Crying and Ain't Talking About Love.
Look, it changed. There are a lot of those, you know, seminal records, if you will, and that was a record. It really was one of the first 15 records that I ever bought on my own in the late 1970s.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I'm a particular fan of Women and Children First, which I think is the third record, but there you go. Eddie Van Halen's
Dust
sound.
In the Wind,
stuff.
Huh, Fred? You guys were really rocking out at your high school.
Roosevelt High School.
Well, yesterday, the Super Bowl, such a blowout. A lot of viewers just started paying attention to prop bets. And here's how some of the sillier ones played out. Heads or tails? It was tails. Taylor Swift shown during the national anthem? No, thank goodness. Did Kendrick Lamar perform with a hat on? Yes. Did he mention Drake? Yes. What color was the Gatorade? Well, we all know because they did it so early.
3 minutes left.
Yes.
3 minutes left. I couldn't believe it.
Ethan, I couldn't criticize that. I would have been okay if they did it with 3 minutes left in the first half.
I would have too. By the way, it was yellow. I think that's appropriate for
all. On TV, they said it was eagle green.
Well,
it looked yellow to me.
Yeah, well, green, yellow, they don't have necessarily a classic green flavor, so they're considered the same thing.
And was there a tush-push touchdown? Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, there was.
First touchdown.
Was there?
Yep.
I watched Kendrick Lamar. I thought, this game is over. There's no way they're ever coming back. And I started doing laundry.
Good move.
What did you think of the Fox graphic for the scoreboard?
People hated that.
Thank you, Fred.
Yeah. Were you a hater of this as well?
I am. I hated it.
I think it was fun. Why do we hate it?
It was terrible.
It was terrible.
Just a little.
It was so bad.
Why was it? Yeah. It was just boring.
It was like they ran out of graphic designers and they had a 7-year.
Here's what I thought happened.
It was terrible.
Honestly, here's what I thought happened.
Okay.
There was a computer malfunction with the graphics thing and they had to put something up there just because they had nothing else to do.
Okay.
Honestly, that's what it looked like. So this guy, I retweeted this yesterday afternoon. I'm so glad, Fred, you brought this up. I don't know this guy, Eric Seals, but it was one that I saw on Twitter. Have you or a loved one been victimized by the ugly Fox graphics package during the Super Bowl? You may be entitled to compensation. And he said, what the hell? It's like graphic from Madden 95 on PlayStation.
Okay.
Yeah, it was weird.
The graphic that opened the Super Bowl with all the, here we are, Mardi Gras, blah, blah. I thought that was horrendous. But I didn't mind. I could read it. I don't see why everybody's having a heart attack.
Maybe it was for those of us who have reading glasses, because I could read it too.
But
it was unnecessarily large, I guess I would say.
I started fast on Twitter yesterday with the game, and then I slowed down very quickly. My first tweet was, what the hell is this Fox Sports score bug? The second one was, well, that didn't take long. Refs for hashtag refs versus Eagles after the first penalty.
Yeah. Interference
and
play,
then
yeah.
after that, I was silent.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I also, when Tom Brady was shown talking,
that was weird.
And they had the outside of Bourbon Street. It looked like he couldn't get in the stadium.
I think I missed that part.
Yeah.
Any time he talked with the what's the guy's name that was with him?
The broadcaster?
Yeah.
Kevin Burkhardt?
Yeah, when they were in that, and it was trying to look like Bourbon Street, I just thought it looked cheap.
You're talking on the backdrop. Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm with you.
It looked like they were stuck outside.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I did see that. That was odd.
It was weird.
It did look funny. Yeah. It did look a little funny.
According to an annual survey, an estimated 22.6 million American workers planned to miss work today, Super Bowl Monday. Now, that's up from 16 million last year, and it also breaks the previous record of 18.8 million from 2023. Now, there may have been even more no-shows, who just decided today, I can't make it, but they're thinking that if they switch the Super Bowl week so that Monday falls on President's Day, then we would have Monday off. And that apparently is something that people are considering.
You know what? It wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world. The NFL is probably going to add another week at some point and just make a bye just to extend the season.
Uh-huh.
That wouldn't be super surprising. I think when they added the last week, they added it on at the beginning of the season. It makes sense to add this one at the end.
I'm with Ethan. It would not be completely out of the question, just given the map and the calendar like that.
I'm expecting an executive order, either for
Yes.
Or saying that all halftime shows have to be entertaining.
Right.
I'm actually surprised he hasn't done that one yet.
By the way, how was watching Kendrick Lamar with Joyce, neighbor Joyce, Fred?
It was great because neither of us could understand anything he was saying.
That worked
out well.
We
were just oh, that's pretty. Because of all the flashing lights.
Do we have any early hopes for next year, like who we would like to see?
Come on, Bills.
I was actually you know, you're talking about the game or the halftime show?
Halftime show.
Okay.
Oh.
I was actually thinking about this, and I don't know who would be right for that situation. You know, someone that comes to mind just because she's blown up, but they don't usually give this to newbies, is someone like Chappell Roan, who's very visual and theatrical.
A little early.
No,
maybe.
I know, but it might be have to be someone like that.
I'm thinking, like, how have we not? We haven't seen Justin Bieber. I think Ed Sheeran would be great. He's got a lot of great hits. Oh, crowd doesn't like that.
Like it, but I like, yeah,
Post Malone, I think, would be another interesting one.
I'm
hopeful.
But see, Post Malone, the thing about Post Malone,
you could do all kinds of genres.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You could do all kinds of genres. That would actually,
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if, he's kind of white, though. Even though he doesn't look white.
I know, he's got the
face tattoos and stuff. That's a little risky. We'll see.
Well, I always like this story every year. The Never Miss a Super Bowl Club is still at it. The three surviving members are aged 88, 85, and 82.
Wow.
And they've been to all Super Bowls. They made it to yesterday's game, all three of them. They've gone to every Super Bowl since the first one in 1967. Here they are from yesterday.
It's great to get with these guys again. I'm probably one of the original members.
My favorite city to watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
I mean, the people here, the weather's usually good.
My favorite city is New Orleans.
He said, my favorite city is New Orleans, because they've been seeing Super Bowls in all different cities.
You know, they're probably thankful for this being, you know, the Chiefs being in for the third time. They're saving a little bit of money with these ticket prices going down.
Probably. <you know. laughs> What were you going to say, Fred?
I was just going to ask about the ticket prices. Didn't I see the average price was $5,000?
Oh, my gosh.
The average was around $5,600, I believe.
Yeah.
But the cheapest tickets dropped down significantly. We talked about this, I think, last week, Mark. I think the cheapest tickets dropped down in the secondary market to, like, below 1,000.
Whoa. Yeah, well, look, there's a couple of different factors there. Just with the Chiefs fatigue, that is a much bigger stadium than Allegiant and some of the other newer stadiums. It's an old dome, and there's like 80,000 people. But here's one thing I would say. You know, I have some friends that went, and they've gone to every Super Bowl that the Chiefs have been in the last 6 years. So this was their, you know, three-peat. A couple of friends from Columbia, Missouri. But Carlin, my friend, this is one of my hunting pals, was sending me all kinds of pictures from the last few days. And what I said, and I think this is what people do, I really am at the point where I thought at one point in my life, I got to go to a Super Bowl or I got to go to a Final Four. Like I always said, if Mizzou's in the Final Four, I might not have to worry about that. I'll go to a Final Four. But here's what would be actually fun, because based on all of the pictures and images and the fun and the bands that we're playing, I'd love to go to a Super Bowl for 3 days and then get a flight back in the afternoon on that Sunday and be on my couch by kickoff. Because all the run-up stuff, it's sort of like the Kentucky Derby. People ask, well, what would you do all this for, like, a two-minute race? Well, it's the build-up. They do a lot in Louisville leading up to the Derby itself. There's bands, there's parties, there's all that stuff. And the Super Bowl has that as well, which is one of the reasons they don't want to move it to a Saturday, because
exactly.
That's a big party day and lots of sponsors, et cetera.
You know, I want to throw this one in, too, because President Trump and the pennies, you know, he's announced that he wants to quit making them because they cost more than 2 cents to make each 1 cent coin. Fred has the details. Let me find that part.
It's ridiculous. Right? Oh, yeah, it's another common sense thing.
It is another common sense thing. The Mint says it lost $85.3 million last year on the 3.2 billion pennies it produced. Get rid of them.
Holy moly.
Yes, I had no idea it was that bad.
Or at least lessen the production.
Nickels
Nobody
are
uses
next.
Them.
Yeah, and nickels, they cost 14 cents to make a nickel. So
yeah, let's make some changes.
That's going to happen. I wonder if people are freaking out about
changes.
That. But the penny,
let's
come
make
on.
Some changes. That was good, Mark.
Yeah, huh?
Mark, you didn't
that?
Even realize
huh?
you said it, Mark.
Oh, he's on it. And finally.
Did you not hear anything I just said?
Who
said, let's make some changes? I said, that was a good one.
Oh, okay, sorry. I got distracted there momentarily.
Of course you did.
That is.
And Sue's dues. We have to. How much, Mark, did it cost to make nickels? Do you remember?
Yeah, 13 cents.
14.
Okay,
close.
Well, that was
pretty close.
I knew
that
it was like three
close.
Times
Come
the amount.
Come on, good job. And finally, at Sue's News, we have today's random fact. Oh, I kind of like this one. Colgate started selling a line of frozen dinners in 1982, but they failed miserably because people associated their logo with toothpaste, not good food. So they saw Colgate, thought, I'm not buying that.
You should have seen, if you could have seen the reaction that Fred and I had when you told that, we both had the same reaction.
Yeah, I was right there with you, too.
That's weird. But that's why we call them random facts, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes,
Sue's
is.
News in the books for a Monday after the Super Bowl. And I paid attention to 75-80% of Sue's News.
Yes,
I'm just going to tell you that right
that
now.
That was good.
She rocked me like the rock.
We got Brian Kilmeade tickets to give away all this week. We gave away a pair in the last hour. Brian's coming to the Factory on March 22nd. It's perfect because it's a Saturday night. This is the biggest venue that he will play on his tour. It's more of a variety show. If you've seen Brian the last couple of times, he's come here to St. Louis. He's so generous to us. We've had him at book events. And during those, you know, he gets up, he does his spiel, and then he answers some questions. It's going to be a little different. And I'm not even sure all what to expect, quite honestly. Oh, by the way, I've got an offer for Brian. I'm going to have to tell him about this week.
Ooh.
You know who's a huge Brian Kilmeade super fan?
Do tell.
Our friend George Gray from The Price is Right.
Really?
And George was texting me saying, hey, did you know Brian Kilmeade's coming to St. Louis? I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of aware of that. I mean, he's in Hollywood. He doesn't know all these things. But he's very interested, and he said he made the offer. He goes, look, if you want me to introduce you or Brian, you know, with the
that
Price is Right
is
voice.
Awesome.
Right? I mean, they may have all that planned, but we will have some sort of role on stage, the 97.1 Talk FM Talk team, so we'll have to see what happens. But I do have tickets to give away each and every day this week. We've already done that for this afternoon. Anson Frericks is going to come up in the next hour. He was a top executive at Anheuser-Busch, and he wrote about DEI. He's actually written a book called Last Call for Bud Light, The Fall and Future of America's Favorite Beer. An excerpt from that was in the Free Press last week, and we're going to highlight Anson. And then we got TJ Moe, former Mizzou and NFL star, will be with us. He contributes to Fearless with Jason Whitlock. Right now, Brad Young is with us, who is our legal analyst with Harris, Dahl, Fisher & Young. Hello, Brad. How are you this afternoon?
Mark, I'm doing well. Thank you, sir.
I'm going to talk to Cusumano here in a couple of minutes about the Super Bowl, but I was up in Columbia on Saturday for that basketball game. I will say it was an outstanding game. It really was entertaining, but man, Buzz Williams and A&M, they had our number. The defense was really effective, and they dropped two games in a row. They did not drop out of the top 25, but a couple of tough losses for our Tigers, Brad.
Yeah, it was a couple of tough losses, but listen, A&M was ranked higher than Mizzou, so I can't necessarily say it's unexpected. Had we won that game, we would have leapfrogged up in the polls, obviously, but I don't think it did us any serious damage.
No, I don't think so either, and here's what I'd say. I don't know how long it's been since you've been to a basketball game. For me, I think it was before the pandemic, and you know, even then, I wasn't seeing a completely full Mizzou arena. That place was jammed to the rooftop. It was very energetic. It was loud, so great home atmosphere. It was the first home loss for Mizzou all season, unfortunately. I accept the responsibility that I, you know, deserve on that one, Brad, just so you know. Let's talk about the situation with Trump and with all these federal layoffs. Are they legal? Let's just start there. He's laying off a ton of the federal workforce. You got people on the other side that are freaking out about this, hyperventilating. Is it legal?
Well, That question's going to take a little bit to explain, Mark. On the one hand, on the one side of the issue, the office, actually it's the union rep lawyers are saying it's not legal because Congress has funded these agencies, and therefore since that funding requires these people be paid and at the funding levels authorized by Congress, layoffs are illegal or not permissible under law. That's the one side. Now, Clinton administration did a lot of layoffs. In fact, I was looking at this today. They didn't do anywhere near the number of layoffs that Trump is doing. But there were thousands of people who were laid off in the Clinton administration. That year, they balanced the budget.
Interesting.
1 year, they balanced the budget. A lot of that was done by layoffs. However, here's the big difference between now and then. The Clinton layoffs were done with bipartisan congressional approval. That hasn't been given to Trump yet, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't happen at a later date. For example, in the tax reconciliation bill that's currently working its way through Congress, Congress could easily uphold what Trump is doing, which would eliminate any legal issues with the layoffs.
But one of the reasons the union is advising some of these workers to not take the buyout is because the offer they claim doesn't guarantee that they'll have compensation or that the benefits will be paid, right?
Well, there is actually some truth to that because right now the funding for most of these agencies ends in March. And so what happens in April, again, the power of the purse under the Constitution comes from Congress. So there's no absolute guarantee of it. But let me put it in this context, Mark. You know, every time there's some sort of a budget battle showdown with Congress and the government so-called gets shut down, there's wailing and gnashing of teeth,
of course,
nationwide from the media. Oh, my goodness, these people are out of work. They have no guarantee of being paid. what happens every single time without exception?
They get paid every time.
They get paid. They come back to work, and basically it turns into a extended paid vacation. That's the way I'm looking at this. Technically, has Congress approved these buyouts? No. Right now, is there a guarantee that those buyout orders will be upheld by the federal government? No. Is it going to happen? Yes. And so that's the context in all of the yelling and screaming and hairs on fire. That's really what it boils down to.
So here's what President Trump said yesterday.
We have a long way to go, and we're talking about fraud, waste, abuse. And when a president can't look for fraud and waste and abuse, we don't have a country anymore. So we're very disappointed with the judges that would make such a ruling.
That was the president on Air Force One. He actually might have said that earlier today. But obviously, you know, there are attempts. In the Brett Baer interview, he also went on this particular, you know, issue.
Hang on. Disagree with it 100%. I think it's crazy. And we have to solve the efficiency problem. We have to solve the fraud, waste, abuse, all the things that have gone in the government. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of money that's going to places where it shouldn't be going, where if I read a list, you'd say this is ridiculous. And you've read the same lists, and there are many that you haven't even seen. It's crazy. It's a big scam.
It is a scam. A lot of people agree with this. But then you got, you know, liberals out there like Connecticut Democrat Chris Murphy.
This is the most serious constitutional crisis the country has faced, certainly since Watergate.
All right. There's no hyperbole there, Brad, right? The biggest constitutional crisis since Watergate. Are they kidding us at this point?
No, they're trying to out-sensationalize the Trump administration. But let me, again, put this into perspective here. Are there some USAID programs that are beneficial and worthwhile? I would say probably yes.
I said that last week, right.
Okay, but anything that you do in this type of thing, you got to take it down. If you're going to redo your house, you rip it down to the studs, and then you rebuild. And that's literally what Trump is doing here. He's ripping down USAID to its studs and then rebuild and find those programs that are worthwhile, fund those, and then cut out the money for Uganda for condoms or whatever the silliness that we see coming out here. That's how this is going to play out.
The problem is that, and you and I have talked about this issue before, if we're being honest, the addiction to the spigot in Washington is bipartisan. Right? It is bipartisan.
Oh, it absolutely is.
So, there is a scenario where you have people from across the country calling Republican members of Congress saying, hey, you know, we're kind of down with all this agenda and everything, but not when it affects us on, you know, some of the climate change grants that farmers get. All this stuff is being spread across the country. I was with a friend last week who has a wife that does independent contracting, and one of her big clients is something that's associated with wind and energy, with farms, and that, you know, that funding got cut off, maybe temporarily. But I think what you're saying is what I'd like to have happen is, okay, let's take a look at these programs. What's the ROI? And justify them.
Absolutely. And I do believe that's exactly what's going on here. But let me go back to the workforce buyout issue for just a minute. I just ran the numbers. I looked up what is the average employee salary for a federal employee, taking all 2 million plus employees.
Mm. Do I want to know
works out
the answer?
To be $106,000 per employee is the average. Now, if you look at as of today, 65,000 workers have accepted the buyout. That in of itself represents $7 billion in savings that comes right off of our expensive overspending in Washington.
Wow. I support
$7
billion. I support that. Right. The numbers, they add up quickly, right? And that's what, you know, look, they're finally going in here. They're slicing and dicing. I do have some deep regret that I'm not one of these attorneys, because the attorneys are going to make so much money on all this stuff on both sides fighting back and forth.
Well, I am available. You know, within the hearing of this station, listen, I'm available for hire. $4.25 an hour.
And we understand that. We understand. But, you know, to a certain extent, this is what people want, and they want to see this exposed. And I think it's really interesting, the reaction on the left, AOC, Chris Murphy, whoever you want to cite, that they can't even bring themselves to say, okay, you know, that money is wasteful. There's no emphasis, even on CNN, Brad, you probably noticed this, Face the Nation, Margaret Brennan yesterday. They want to focus on all of the things where people are affected by the money and the spigot being turned off. They don't want to talk about the spigot itself.
Exactly. And I think ultimately that's going to be the Democrats' undoing here, Mark, because They just got routed in November. And now you're having AOC and her ilk saying, no, we need to buy more condoms and DEI programs for Eastern Africa. I mean, it's ridiculous. And when they defend those types of programs, that just cements even more in the minds of the electorate that the Democrats do not stand for American values.
You know, they keep saying all this stuff. You got to, they're making claims like the American people are against Trump on this. And then you have this in the other direction. You kind of heard a little bit at the Super Bowl yesterday. This is Anthony Salvanzo. I know Anthony. I like him. He's a polling guy at CBS News.
He's doing, in the eyes of the public, what he said he would do in the campaign. There's political value in that. In fact, 70% of people say he's doing what he promised. That's whether they approve of him or not. There's another part of this that continues over from the campaign. There were words that he was described as being tough, being energetic, and he still is today in big majority numbers. The idea of deporting those in the country illegally continues to be popular. We saw that in the campaign. Sending troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. Again, majority in favor. We'd seen that in the campaign.
And the list goes on, Brad. I mean, look, the things that he promised to do, the things that he's doing right now, the American people are not saying, oh, wait a second, we're having buyer's remorse. The Democrats are trying to spin it that way. That's not the reality of what's happening.
No, and you're not seeing that in the polling data. And I think that this is something else that's not getting a lot of attention. But you mentioned a moment ago, Mark, when you said the out-of-control spending comes from both the right and the left. You know, what we're seeing here, I think, at least in my lifetime, we're seeing the first ever libertarian actions in Washington, which says not we're just going to give it to red or blue, but if we don't need it, cut it. And that concept is so different from the way Washington typically thinks that we're seeing a revolution in libertarianism that, frankly, we've never seen before.
No, we've never seen it before. I've been waiting for something like this. And that's why I have friends out there that are horrified by some of this, or they think that they're horrified. Why? Why are you so? Even John Fetterman said, if we're looking at some of this nonsense that the government wastes, if all you want to do is stand up for the Alphabet Mafia because they seemingly are planted very, you know, high profile in all of this spending, that's all you got. So how about talk about the American taxpayers? I just don't understand how the American media, and this is one of the problems, can't go to American taxpayers and focus on them being happy that this stuff isn't happening. I haven't seen one story like that outside of Fox.
Zero. I haven't seen any. And I was watching Meet the Press and what was I also watching? The Today Show on Sunday morning. And there was nothing positive said about any of this. It was only woe is me, and the country's going down the tubes. And yet there was not one mention of, look, we've got a $2 trillion yearly deficit. And that all goes to China. And we're hopefully going to take a bite out of that deficit so we can start whittling that deficit down.
The media is broken right now. They really are. They don't know how to manage this. They don't know how to handle it. And they're quite troubled by the fact that the American people are cheering a lot of this on because they voted for it.
Yes.
And they really are lost. Brad, always great to have you on. I really appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Hey, one quick thing. Wednesday, the 12th, I'm filling in for you 3 to 6.
If I end up going, here's the thing. I'm going to Mid-Missouri that day, and I'm glad you brought that up. The weather could interfere. My plan, the operating plan, is to get out of here tomorrow night after the show so I don't have to deal with this. But I do appreciate it if you're going to be here, and I'll keep you posted, Brad. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm in the bullpen.
All right. We got to have you there. We need you for backup. We got Cusimano coming up next.
I can use it for the weekend or a one-night stand.
Really looking forward to a conversation with Anson Frerichs in the next hour, former top executive at Anheuser-Busch InBev, and he's written a book called Last Call for Bud Light, The Fall and Future of America's Favorite Beer. And he wrote the book, but there's an excerpt that was in the Free Press last week that I read from. And for those of us here in St. Louis, I think we're especially interested in his message. He goes through the whole Dylan Mulvaney debacle and what happened and what he thinks the company might do in the future. But it's a great lesson in how DEI goes awry. And that's coming up. We got TJ Moe in the next hour, plus an audio cut of the day. Frank Cusimano is here, sports director of KSDK. It just was a flat game from the very beginning yesterday, Frank. I don't even know what to say about the Chiefs' performance. It was, you know, stunning to see them not be able to do anything offensively.
Yeah, and I don't think it's so much about the Chiefs. It's more about the Eagles and that incredible roster. I mean, when you can rush the quarterback and sack him 6 times and beat the tar out of him all day with only 4 getting to the passer, I mean, that shows you just how talented that defensive line is. And on the other side, they couldn't touch Patrick Mahomes. I mean, they couldn't touch Jalen Hurts. When your offensive line averages 6'6", 300, I think, and 38 pounds, well, Jalen Hurts had all day to throw, and you just got to see a healthy Jalen Hurts with time to throw, looking like a really good quarterback again.
I told you the way to handicap it, Dan Dierdorf used to say that you go, if all things are equal, go with the team that has more fat guys, and that might have been the Eagles. I think that formula worked, right? That was the Eagles.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the hero of this game is Howie Roseman, the general manager. I think we talked about it Friday. This guy has the best 53-man roster in the NFL, and he just drafts great players from Georgia and Alabama. He acquires good ones like Saquon Barkley in the NFL, and they're loaded. And here's the thing is they got 8 starters who are like in their first or second year, so they're not paying these guys. I know we kind of overreact after a Super Bowl and say, well, they're going to be dominant for years to come. But salary-wise and putting this whole thing together, Philadelphia, they should be good for a long time.
So let me shift to some other things. And I was at the game on Saturday in Columbia, Missouri, and that was just a heartbreaker. It was a great game, very entertaining. We talked about Buzz Williams and A&M on Friday. They did the job they had to do, and unfortunately, the Tigers lose 2 in a row. They have Oklahoma at home on Wednesday night. Didn't really hurt them too much in the rankings, but you don't want to keep sliding in February because that's going to hurt your NCAA seed.
Yeah. The thing about it is, I thought about this today, is that that conference is so great that Mizzou can have an 0-2 week and still be 21st in the country. So, like, you lose to Tennessee, you lose to Texas A&M. But that one hurt on Saturday because you had that momentum, you had the lead late. But I don't know if I'm going to think, oh, I'm really worried about Mizzou because, look, their great player made their big shot and our great player did not make his big shot. I don't think we're going to have, you know, Grill and Tamar Bates have a combined shooting effort like that again this season.
They really shut down Caleb Grill. I mean, it was impressive. They just wouldn't let him get a shot off. And this kid for A&M, Coleman, I think was his name, he had like 19 rebounds. Yeah, I think he had 12 in the first half. He was just crushing us on the inside.
Yeah, points in the paint the first half. I think they had 24 of the 38 points were in the paint in the first half for the Aggies.
What happened on Saturday night with the Blues and the Blackhawks?
Well, it was wild because it went to a shootout. It went to a 10-round shootout. It was like watching a prize fight. No one could score. And in the end, Foxa, not the most likely candidate, had the most, you know, attractive shootout goal maybe of the season for the Blues. So they escaped with a victory. They had to do it against the Blackhawks. But this break now where they're not going to play for about 11 more days, you know, look, they're coming back. They're 8 points behind in the final playoff spot. They got a lot of work to do when they come back. It's like a 26-game sprint to the end.
Yeah, unfortunately. Anything else you want to mention here this afternoon? What am I forgetting?
A big one tomorrow because SLU has George Mason. They're the number one team in the Atlantic 10. And SLU's got to win against a good team. They want to get that double bye in the conference tournament and finish in the top 4, and right now they're 3rd in the conference. That'd be a huge win tomorrow at Chaffetz for them.
It's just it's a sad sports period, if you will, because for those of us who are huge football fans, and I'm in that camp, both college football and professional football, no more football until the end of August. Now, usually I'm able to fill that gap with NCAA college basketball. It seems like that's possible. And also some spring baseball. That seems less possible.
Yeah, just being especially honest. This year. Yeah. But you're right. You've just depressed me. No football for like till August. You're right. That's sad.
Well, and I don't count the whatever they're calling the USFL or anything.
Battlehawks.
I mean, I just don't count that. Apologies to the Battlehawks fans out there. It's not real all football. Right, thanks, Frank. We'll talk Friday.
Take care.
All right, we'll see you. Yeah, I can't get my friend Chris Smith is
trying
a big
to get
Battlehawk.
You into it. Yeah.
I don't know. I can't get there, unfortunately. It's all about the NFL and college football. On that topic, TJ Moe will be here, former Mizzou and NFL player, and never shy about his opinions. He'll join us in the next hour to reflect on the Super Bowl and some of the woke stuff that went on. We also have, as I mentioned, Anson Frerichs, who is the former executive at Anheuser-Busch, who's written a book about the Bud Light debacle, coming up after Fox News at 5.
Get more at 971talk.com.